Hello and welcome to everyone listening to the Written in Melanin podcast, the place where you come to get your weekly dose of melanated creativity. I'm your host, CM Lockhart, an author of fantasy books featuring black girls who aren't all that nice and the owner of the Melanin Library, an online database of books written by black authors. And in this space, I share with you everything I've learned on my journey as a black and indie author. I'm glad you're here. Welcome to a special bonus episode of the Written in Melanin podcast, you guys. So today I am here with one of my favorite people in the entire world, Audra Russell. She is a native Jersey girl living in Maryland, and she is a blogger, a freelance writer, a podcaster, and a published author. Inspired by the late Gil Noble and his television program, Like It Is, in 2020, her search for fiction books by Black authors led her to create her own talk show in the form of the Between the Reads podcast. And today, you guys, she is joining me here to discuss what it's like to be an author who reads and promotes other authors and possibly anything else, because if you have been on the YouTube channel, if you have been on the podcast, if you know me at all, then you know that when I get with Audra, this conversation could take a turn to go anywhere. So, that being said, welcome to the podcast, Audra.
Hi, Chelsea. I just love your intro. I could listen to it all day.
Thank you. I put a lot of work into it.
And something's trying to choke me right now. I'm trying not to cough.
Oh, snap.
Okay. Here we go.
Okay. So that's that professional podcasting right there. She just turned away from the mic, hit the little mute button real quick and off screen. You know, that's a professional. She's not messing with that audio, you guys. But that being said, like I said in the introduction, Audra and I have been talking to each other, I don't know, since 2020? Since your podcast, so we've known each other for like 2 going on 3 years. That's wild.
Yeah, because you so crazy. Our first real thing was you did my book launch for me, and that it went
no
from there.
I was on your podcast before that. We did Read It Black to Me on your podcast. You invited me on to talk about Keeping Promises. That's how we met.
But I thought I could have sworn the book launch was first.
Mm-mm. You invited me.
That's right, because my book launch was. Yeah. Right. You're right. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah.
We coming up on 3 years, homies. 3 years.
Wow. Yeah. So that's impressive. That's impressive.
It's impressive, and it's funny because 3 years, you and I are tight, and I have yet to meet you in person yet. Ain't that something?
And it's crazy because we live in the same time zone. I think you're only like 6 or 7 hours away from me.
Yeah.
That's like a day drive.
Mm-hmm.
So for those of you listening, I have an electric car, so gas means nothing to me at this current stage of my life. So I really could just drive up to go visit her in Maryland. And I don't know why I haven't yet.
I used to take that drive to North Carolina all the time when my parents lived there. So yeah, it's like 7 hours.
We'll work that out. Ooh. Yeah, we're gonna have to do something about that.
Yeah.
But onto the podcast, the official stuff. So, officially, Audra,
yes.
Please introduce yourself to the listeners. Tell them about. Let's start with your podcast, Between the Reads, because that's where we met. So let the listeners know about that in case they don't get more than 5 minutes into this.
Okay. Between the Reads, basically. In 2019, the end of 2019, I was. Given an indie book by a friend of mine, and I got the book, read it, and then found the author on Instagram, went into her DMs, and we kikied and ha-ha'd about her book and laughed about it and about the ending and stuff like that. So basically it was like Between the Reads before Between the Reads was born. And as she and I began talking, I said, wouldn't it be great if there was a podcast where we could like talk like this, and then that way people could get to know about books and stuff like that. She was like, you should do it. And I said, okay. And so I spent December of 2019 researching everything about podcasting, read a book called So You Want to Start a Podcast, watched some YouTube videos on what kind of mic and setup to get, and then put all the infrastructure in place, got the website, all of that. And then January 20th was the first episode. And, you know, I wanted to shine a light on Black indie authors and Black traditionally published authors whose books are good, but aren't getting the publicity that they deserve because of the way that this world is set up. And that's how Between the Reads was born.
I love it. I love it. Not only like as an author, but just like as a fellow podcaster, I'll say. But and also just like as a Black person who enjoys reading, I really loved your podcast because as an author who was on the show, like you really have this amazing talent for getting people on and making them feel comfortable and just like getting to the keys and the ha-has and like talking about the book without giving away too much so that you're really giving an experience for the listener to know like, is this the book that you really want to get into? But you also get to know the author behind the book so that when you do pick it up, you feel like you are getting information. It's kind of like when you watch actor interviews before a movie comes out and then you actually watch the movie and you're just like, oh, okay, so this is what he was talking about when he was on this interview with this person. You get that same feeling with books and you do an amazing job with it. So I love it. I love listening to it. I love being on it. I can't wait to release my third book so that I can come back on it.
Yes.
But it's definitely on the milestone, the milestone list. Like, okay, check, editing, okay, cover, check, okay. Did I reach out to Audra? Nope, check. Let's get that done.
Well, I'm glad you enjoy it. It was something that started and it really took off because, of course, the Panini hit when I was about 3 months into it. But it really became a passion. It dusted off an old dream that I had of wanting to be, you know, having a talk show and slash being, you know, kind of a radio DJ. And I did get my undergraduate degree, one of them in broadcast journalism. So it just took off. And it was like, people didn't believe me when I first started. They're like, well, you must have been doing this for years. I'm like, no, this is like my third week. They're like, there's no way. Like,
she's like, I'm actually not that good at it, but watch me do it. I love it. I love it. But that's how I feel like you know that you're really doing something that you're supposed to be doing when other people recognize the passion that you have for it and the innate skill that comes with that passion. That's just like, yeah, no, like you have to have been doing this because there's a certain level of confidence that comes with knowing that you're doing something that you are absolutely supposed to be doing, you know?
Yeah.
So I love that. So this is a not so subtle plug that once you finish listening to this podcast episode to head over to Between the Reads and go check it out. If you want more of me and Audra, like I said, I've been on her podcast twice. There is the first episode, Read It Black to Me, where we just talk about my first book, Keeping Promises, and also just being Black and starting Written in Melanin Publishing. There's also the second episode where we talk about We Are the Origin, which honestly, you guys, by and far is one of the best interviews that I have ever been on. So for sure, check it out. And if you actually want to see us, you can head over to YouTube to her channel to check it out because there is a video recording of all her podcast episodes on her YouTube channel. And there'll be links in the show notes for all of this. So yeah, you already know what to do. So
you're just making me blush over here, Chelsea.
I mean, that's what we're here for. We're here to promote. We're here to share the information, the wealth, you know? So that being said, you are not only a podcaster, but you're an author as well. Would you like to tell the people a little bit about Bloodland?
Oh, boy. You know, you have such a better pitch than me with We Are the Origin. Let's see. Bloodland came about when my daughter and I went to visit a former plantation here in Maryland. And it was called L'Hermitage. And it was run by two white Haitians who actually fled Haiti during the revolution and came here with 12 Haitians who they kidnapped and enslaved here. When we went to go visit it, because it's right up near kind of Gettysburg and all that area, we went to the house on the plantation thinking that you could go in. And when we drove to the house and we parked, I was taking video and stuff like that. And my daughter kept looking up in the top window of the house. And I said, what are you looking at? And she said, that man up there. And I looked and I didn't see anything. And so I was like, how do we get in this house? And so I got my phone out and realized we were at the house and not the visitor center. So I went over to the visitor center. We drove over there and we went in. I said, how do we get in the house? Is it open? Is it not open today? Whatever. And he's like, it hasn't been open in over 10 years because inside it's like infested with termites and stuff and it's just not safe. And I looked at my daughter and she looked at me and we looked at him And he was like, oh, you saw him, didn't you? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there is some kind of entity up in that house. And, you know, I've always been a writer. I've written, everybody says this, but I truly have been writing since I was a little girl. I have like multiple books I've written that will never see the light of day. And I've always written essays and short stories and things. So my writer brain started going. And I was like, what if I wrote a story about a black couple who buys an old plantation and, you know, deals with the ghosts in it? And then the funny thing is, you know, because of the history of Haiti and everything, I started reading about Haiti and stuff like that. And so I developed this story, and it's about a black couple who they're searching for a home. She's pregnant, and they stumble upon this former plantation that somehow has slipped under the radar of registries and historic places, and they buy it. And then she deals with the ghosts that are trapped there that used to be enslaved there. And there's a hitch of how she's connected to these ghosts. And Teresa, the main character, is responsible for freeing those ghosts. So that is what Bloodland is about. I don't have your, you know, I write, you know, about, you know, black girls who aren't so nice. I don't have that. I'm sorry.
That's fine. Honestly, I'm going to be honest. Like, when my little intro of like, hi, if you've never seen me before, my name is Chelsea and I write books about black girls who aren't all that nice. That literally came from a TikTok when it was just like, the advice was introduce yourself. And I was just like, I don't know what you want me to tell you. I was still writing We Are the Origin. I was like, it's an assassin, but I'm not always going to write about assassins. All I know is that there's a black girl and she don't like nobody. So there we go. That's what I do. And all of my books in the future are going to be about black girls who don't like nobody. That's who I am. That is my truth that I live in. I'm very introverted. I don't like people. If I like you, you're special. But that's just me. That's the truth that I live in. So, yeah, don't be like me. You have people. I don't live that life. I don't live that life. So,
yeah, but so that's Bloodland.
Bloodland.
A big nutshell.
And as someone who has read Bloodland, you guys, I can promise you that this book is good. And Audra is going to be re-releasing it in 2023, correct?
Yes.
That is the plan?
That is the plan.
So, I don't think we have an actual date set in concrete yet. But
no.
If you guys continue listening to the podcast, I will tell you when it's out because I ain't going to shut up about it. There you go. So. But now that we kind of have a little bit of background of who you are for our listeners in your podcasting and your book, let's talk about the creation of Between the Reads and how it was inspired by Like It Is. So I never listened to a radio show. My parents were very much TV people. They weren't radio people. Like, that's just my family background. So what was Like It Is and how did that inspire Between the Reads?
It was actually a TV show. And it was the longest running TV show with a black lead host. And he actually got his start kind of during the civil rights movement. And when everything was being, you know, broadcast, all the stuff that was the horribleness of that, the civil rights movement, news rooms were taken to task because all of these stories were told from a white male perspective, and there were no black people that worked in these newsrooms, or if they did, they were never in any positions of power. And so I think it was CBS that he was on, maybe ABC, I don't remember. They were like, we're going to correct this. And the funny thing was that Gil wrote a book about these experiences called Black is the Color of My TV Tube. And in it, he talks about how he was scared of Malcolm X. And then when Malcolm X was assassinated, he read about him and learned more about him. And that's what started him on his journey to television. And so he had this show called Like It Is. And he talked about black issues in the community and, you know, exposed them and you know, shared them through the lens of a black person talking about black issues, because when black issues were usually spoken of or put on the news, they were always through a white lens and they were skewed and they didn't show the underlying reasons behind why something was happening in a neighborhood, the violence, whatever. So his show ran for, I think, 30 years, maybe more.
Oh, wow.
Until he died. He had a stroke and then had to retire and then died, unfortunately. But I used to watch it with my dad on Sundays. And he just would always talk about Black community issues. And I just said, I want to have a show like that. I want to have a talk show like that. And, you know, then when I got to college, I wanted to have a talk show. And then Oprah came out. And everybody's like, oh, so you want to be like Oprah? And I was like, no, I want to be like Gil Noble. No shade to Oprah, but that's not who I wanted to be. Damn it.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with it, but I was like, I wanted to have this talk show before Oprah was even on the talk show scene. So she took my idea.
Not Oprah took my idea. I'm titling this episode that. Oprah took my idea. That's the name of this episode now. I hope you're happy.
Thank you. I love it. She really wrote that down, y'all, with a pen. Like she
I did. I'm not going to forget. That is now going to be the title of this episode. Oprah stole her idea.
Woo! She did. She took all my thunder.
Sometimes you just got to sit with the choices that life has led us to make. But I feel like at some point, like, I won't say at some point, but I know for me, I went through the gamut of things that I wanted to be when I was younger. And I was like, ooh, I would love to be on, like, TV and just get paid to talk. I'm always being told to be quiet. I would love to get paid to talk. That sounds great. And now I'm just kind of like, I don't want to talk to you for free, homie. I don't think that would have been my life calling.
I want to get paid. Oprah took my spot. I could have been a contender. She did it.
Could have been.
Oh, well.
Could have been. But now that I understand who Gil Noble was, because I read it in your bio, and I didn't really have a full understanding of who he was, but now that you've explained, I'm like, I can understand how that could be really impactful for you and what you want to do, especially with what Between the Reads is and uplifting Black authors. And I think I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway for our listeners who don't know you as well as I do. But why was it so important for you to take that aspect of uplifting Black authors? I know you touched on it in the beginning, saying that, you know, that aspect of giving them promotion, you know, when the world is not necessarily so kind to us, mm-hmm. in trying to share our works. But it sounds like there might be something more there, especially since Gil Noble touched on, you mentioned having that Black lens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, when I was first researching publishing a different book before Bloodland, I had tried to find agents and all of that and completely came up blank. And then when I tried to find an agent for Bloodland, I got one hit, one woman that wanted to read the story. She read the story and actually had the audacity, excuse me, to come back and say that it wasn't realistic because Black people don't have the means to buy homes.
Whew, that's a lot to unpack. But
and I, you know, I wish that I hadn't deleted the email. I was so angry I deleted the email. And, you know, she was just like, it's just not believable. Black people don't have means. Black people don't buy homes and this kind of stuff. Talking about, like, I own a home, you know. And so when I started Between the Reads, I thought about it when I was putting everything in place. And I said, do I want to interview all authors or do I want to interview just Black authors? And then I went back to my experiences of looking for people to represent me and then just stumbling upon articles about how Black people are mistreated in the publishing industry, you know, as well as just in America in general. And there are probably a lot of book podcasts out there, I'm sure. But I wanted to have one that was a space where Black people could come, feel comfortable, and know that this platform was created specifically for them. They didn't have to explain their Blackness. We didn't have to explain things about the culture. We could just talk about the story and enjoy the story. And so I just said, okay, I'm going to have only Black authors. And a couple of people who I bounced the idea around with said, well, you know, you're excluding, what about other people of color and, you know, white authors and stuff like that? I'm not thinking about white folks, okay? Because I'm just not, because they got traditional publishing and they get six-figure and seven-figure advances for books when they have no platform to speak of, yada, yada, yada. We all know all this stuff. Right. And I'm Black first. So I'm not Native American. I'm not Latino. I'm not, you know, all these other things. I am Black. So I can only speak from my experiences. I know how we are treated. I know how our stories are treated. So I decided to make Between the Reads a space where our stories are shared and celebrated.
And I love that, because it's honestly the same kind of question that I got when I decided to not only do the Written and Melanin podcast, but to do Written and Melanin publishing in general. And it was just like, okay, so it's just going to be Black people. And I'm like, yeah, because I'm Black. And they were like, they're like, well, what about other people of color? And I was like, just like, love them. They're great. This is not the space for them, because it's just like, while I empathize, it's just like, I cannot bring the same perspective to an Asian woman's work speaking about publishing, or even like the podcast, like the connection piece of it is not going to be the same, because Asian woman writing a story about an Asian protagonist is something that, while I will enjoy it, while I can get into it, while I can empathize, it is not my representation. And I wanted my platform to be my representation. I wanted it to be something that was going to be for what I didn't have, for the younger versions of myself and for whatever generation is coming up. Like, I wanted to create that representation where it's not like you have to have your representation and make space for everyone else at the same time. Like, no, this is just for you. You do not have to share. And I saw a point on Twitter, because, you know, I like to be on Twitter, and it's very interesting, because it's a point that's been made on by multiple people in multiple places. And that is the idea that whenever Black people have a space, we are expected to make space for everyone else to be included. But no one else makes space to include us. So you wouldn't go on an Asian platform that is purely for Asians and be like, well, why aren't you including Black people as well? Yes. You would understand that their history and their culture is very specific and unique to them. And so that is why it is the way that it is. Same thing with Hispanic people. It's just like, you would not go on that platform and be like, well, why aren't you including Asian people? Why aren't you including Black people? Why aren't you including insert minority person here? But I feel like with Black spaces, it's always like, okay, but why is it just for Black people?
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. I cannot. We are the only race that's expected to make room for other people. We are the only race that is, you know, that nothing can ever just be for us. And that's why I kind of hate that term BIPOC, because for me, that's just another way that society wants to make Black people invisible and just squish us in with everybody else. Yes, there are Black, Indigenous, and other people of color, but when it seems like, even in politics and stuff like that, whenever we want something done for us, they won't just do it for us. It's us and Native Americans. It's us and Asians. It's us and this. But when those groups need something, when Asians needed the anti-hate bill, they got it. We've been asking for a lynching bill for how many centuries? We haven't gotten it. So it's like, we're always expected to make these allowances for other people. And I absolutely will not do it. And because I can't speak to those experiences, but I can speak to being Black, and I can speak to the hurdles and the obstacles and the challenges that Black authors go through. So, you know, I don't want to make allowances in my space for other, there are other platforms where people can go to learn about other authors of color, but here in my space, we're doing Black.
Yeah. No, I fully understand that, because if you guys have been listening to the podcast or have been interacting with me since 2019, since I've been on the internet, like for real, then you'll know that's what I am. That's what I'm about. That's why I introduce every episode being with everything that I do, whether it's, you know, the YouTube channel where I'm like, hey, this is, you know, the written in melanin YouTube channel, where whether it's this podcast where, you know, my journey as a Black and indie author, or if it's on TikTok and I'm like, hey, I write stories about about Black girls who aren't all that nice. Mm-hmm. Like, I am who I am, and my life experience is what it is, and I don't think there's anything wrong with claiming it, because I feel like there are so many other people who get to claim their authentic experience, and they're not expected to soften it and make it more palatable for people, or mm-hmm. to expand it to include other people. Mm-hmm. Because, and I've noticed this ever since I was a kid, because I had a friend who was Vietnamese in middle school, and it was just kind of like, no one ever asked her to like adjust her wording or anything to make them feel more comfortable. Or when she was talking about how she does things at home, people just accepted it as like, oh, that's what they do because she's Vietnamese. But I feel like Black people are not afforded that same courtesy. Like, no, we like playing in the rain. Okay, middle school, right? No, I am not going to go play in the rain with you. I am Black. I do not do that. My mother would be upset. Do you see my hair? No. No. But instead of accepting that, they looked at me like, that's weird. Or when they found out, it's like, you don't wash your hair every day. Like, no, homie, no, I be washing my body. I wash my legs every day.
Right.
But go ahead.
Throw the shade.
Middle school, y'all need to understand that this shade comes from middle school Chelsea, who I'm still working on healing in therapy, who had a really rough time being like the only Black girl in a school meant for smart kids. It was rough. Okay. Let me tell you. And middle school kids are evil incarnate anyway.
Yeah.
But then when you're the other and you're tall and you're Black and you're the only tall and the Black girl in like the entire grade. Yeah. Well, the shade's real. I don't take it back.
Tall part, but I can relate to the only part. So,
yeah, it's a very unique experience when you're bigger than everyone else, because somehow that makes you more masculine. Even though I was literally one of the most girliest girls you could ever imagine. Like, I like to wear skirts. I liked carry little purses and stuff around. I like to get my hair done. Like, I wore lip gloss because that's all I was allowed to wear. I couldn't do nothing else. But
right.
You know what? This is not a therapy session. We're not going to get into my middle school experience. Okay?
Because I can go right there with you, okay? I was in middle school in the 80s, right off the you know, right as the embers of the civil rights movement was still burning hot. So, yeah, I went through some...
I'm not going to say it's better or worse. I just know mm-hmm. that it's very different when people think everything is fine and they don't believe you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because it's just like, people don't do that anymore. Lies! Anyway, moving on.
Chelsea just made my whole spirit jump out my chest.
Gotta stay ready, Audra. Gotta stay ready.
I keep getting lulled. False sense of security. I should have learned from doing all the melanin chats that she gonna come out with the outburst that's gonna knock me out my chest. I just,
my bad, homie.
Okay.
Let's shift this back.
Linear
to
thought.
Some of the professional questions I had prepared. So, for those of you listening, we have established at this point that both Audra and I are authors, and we both run podcasts where we talk to other people about their writing. And so one of the things that I wanted to ask you, Audra, is like, do you ever feel like your own writing process is influenced by the authors that you talk to? Because I have noticed for myself that the more authors I talk to, both on and off camera when I'm doing recordings, it's just like, no matter what, it somehow seeps into like my own writing and my own process, especially when that's exactly what we're talking about in the conversation. Do you ever feel like your writing is affected by the people that you talk to?
I'll have to answer that when I start writing again, because this podcast has really taken over my life, and I've been doing a lot of reading. You know, I read for the show, and then I try to read stuff just for myself outside of the show. And so I honestly have not picked up a pen to write anything other than interviews for my blog or just blog articles in general. I have not written any real stories in 2 years, coming up on 3 years. So yeah, shame on me.
No shame.
But
no shame.
I don't think that I could not be influenced by the writers that I speak to, because I'm reading their books, you know, and as writers, we read, like, that's part of studying our craft. And reading all these different styles, I've always just noticed little things that people have done, or a sentence someone will write that's just so beautifully crafted, it just stays with me. So when I go to write my stories, you know, I'm sure I'm going to be affected, because, you know, part of what I do on my podcast is I ask questions about their writing process. I did a lot more regularly in the first year, but I still do it a little bit, and I ask them to tell me, you know, why they like being an indie author, or I'll ask them about their writing process, stuff like that. So, or I listen to their podcasts, like Leslie Penelope, who I had on my show. I love her podcast, My Imaginary Friends, and I love your podcast, Brittany Melanin. So when I listen to those are things that, see, there she goes. Trying to be serious, damn it. But these are shows that when I listen to the advice that you guys give, and your processes and the things that you talk about. And it's just kind of staying in there for me, you know, and it's kind of tucked into that writer's box in the back of my mind. And I know it's going to come out when I write another book, because I've also learned that I can't write every day. I did that for 3 years. I committed and said, I'm going to write every single day for 3 years. And it burned me out. And I realized that's not me. I am a seasonal writer, I guess. When the idea hits, I'm going to write. But if I don't have an idea hitting, I'm not going to write. And that's my truth. So.
And I love that, because again, if you guys listen to the podcast regularly, this is something that I'm very vocal about. This is something that I try to make very clear. I do not agree with the advice to write every day, because I'm gonna say something, and if this hurts your feelings, you should probably sit and recognize some of your privilege and maybe assess that if this hurts your feelings, but I'm gonna say it anyway, okay? Most people are not privileged enough to make time to sit for 4 to 5 hours a day to write a book, especially if they're not motivated, especially if they do not have an idea. Most people in America, speaking specifically about America, cannot take the writing advice of write every day. It's not practical, because most people have lives. Not to say that if you take offense to this, that you don't have a life, but maybe you should sit down and consider your priorities and what you're doing with your life so that you have time to do this. I'm not throwing shade. I'm just being real, because being able to sit down and write every day is a privilege. I know that I am privileged because of how I live my life. Mm-hmm. I do not sit down and write every day. It is near impossible, because life is still lifing. Like, there are other things that have to be done. And one of the things that I feel like, especially in our culture currently, is a lot of people are recognizing that the way that we did school and everybody being treated the same and this idea of normalcy, mm-hmm. it ain't real. It's imaginary. It's a completely social yeah. construct. Yeah. And it's just like, most people's brains do not work like that. And just because one rich white guy's brain was like, yeah, I need to sit down and write every day, and somehow that became the absolute truth for every writer ever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I don't agree with it. And if you guys don't know what I'm talking about, that advice of sit down and write every day is Stephen King's advice.
Yes.
He said it a long time ago,
and that's
back when
why
he was
I
in the height of his writing career.
Yeah.
And it's not bad advice necessarily inherently. I think it's bad advice if you're doing it and you don't want to do it and you're growing to hate the process of writing. At that point, it becomes bad advice.
Yeah, I read his book on writing because, let's see, 2017 is when I said, okay, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to make an author website, and I'm going to go all in with this, because that was on the cusp of, I was homeschooling my children. They were getting more independent with their studies, so I could set them up with whatever they needed to be set up with. They could do their work. I could do my writing. And I was heavy into reading. I probably read almost every popular book out there on the craft of writing. And Stephen King's was one of them. And he said, you have to write every day. So you know me, I'm an early bird. So I would get up early in the morning. I'm up at like 4 in the morning, and from 4 to 9 was sacrosanct. That was my time to write and study the craft. And I every day for 3 years, I got up, I wrote, whether it was a short story, whether it was working on a novel, whether it was just a blog article, whatever it was, I was writing. And at the end of 3 years,
you hated writing.
You know, I'm sitting here and realizing that now. That's something I just realized sitting here with you, that it made me hate it. And it's something that I love. Writing was like air to me before that. I would sit and write something and get totally, you know, when you're in a zone and the world around you falls away because you're just doing what you want to do, that disappeared for me. And I had done
it became a job.
It did. And I became, you know, I was doing NaNoWriMo's during that time and all of that. And it just was, it became something that I was doing because somebody told me that I had to do it, like going to church and stuff like that. And it was something that I wasn't doing for me. And it took the joy out of it for me. And that probably is why after I wrote Bloodland, I haven't written a novel since.
No, like, I understand that, because even as you were explaining it to me, I was just sitting here thinking, I was like, God, if I had to get up every day and write a short story, I would murder someone, not myself, because I'm, like, self-indulgent, but, like, I would murder someone, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like, that just sounds, it sounds so miserable, because it feels like it takes the fun and the creativity out of creating, because it's so mandatory, mm-hmm. and the reality of it is, it's like, creativity is like pulling from a well, mm-hmm. and if you have to pull from the well every day without taking time to replenish it, mm-hmm. you're going to hit the bottom of the well really quickly, and then you're going to keep dropping it and like scraping dirt.
Yeah,
and it's going to be a really miserable experience. And I was just like, ooh, that doesn't. And then 4 to 9 is also like a lot of time, even if mm-hmm. you're not doing that every day, just like in a one-time sitting. It's mm-hmm. like 5 hours, homie. Yeah. Like that's a long time.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and if you did that every day for 3 years, first of all, kudos to you. Mm-hmm. But then you also said it felt like I was doing something that somebody told me to do. And I'm just like, how slay? Because I can't even tell myself what to do 99% of the time. And I'm just like, it's all chaos over here 100% of the time. And I'm just like, I can't imagine reading a book. Because, like, not going to lie. When I get books and they're like, okay, do this and then do that, I'm like, no. I'll do this part.
You're not going to tell me what to do.
You're not going to tell me what to do. Okay. No.
I think you and I both need some therapy over that. Because I'm like, don't tell me what to do, homie. You can suggest.
Honestly.
But.
I my therapist on my like third or fourth visit has said something. And it cracks me up. But it was incredibly accurate and spot on. And it just, I'm probably going to remember for the rest of my life. Because I went. And I was talking to her, I was ranting about whatever was bothering me. I got a lot of issues, y'all. I ain't gonna front. I got a lot of issues. I got talking through. I need a professional. Whatever. I was talking to her, right? And after I got to the end of it, I was like, so I'm just frustrated, you know? Like, I'm just frustrated. And I said, just like that, right? And she's like, and she goes, huh, it sounds like expectations and obligations are a trigger for you. And I was like, well, damn, you're absolutely right. Yeah. Once I have expectations to do something, can't do it, won't do it. No, thank you. Nope, not finna happen. Not in this lifetime, not in next lifetime, not after that either. I ain't finna do it.
And nope. I'm the polar opposite of that. People put their expectations and obligations on me, and then I have to do it because I feel like if I don't, I'm gonna let them down because I'm a
reformed people pleaser.
People pleaser. I'm working on it. I have not mastered it yet because you and I know the situation I'm dealing with my parents. And I'm just like,
You see, for me, I'm a reformed parent pleaser. I don't like people. Too. That's always been true. So
no.
I've always had this thing where it's just like, like if you're not my mom or my dad,
what is
I don't
noise?
Really care if you don't like me. I don't like that's the sound that my brain makes. I don't, if you're not my mom, you're not my dad. I don't really care if you don't like me. I don't really care if you're disappointed in me. Be disappointed then. But you're not going to make me do something I don't want to do. I might not do something I was going to do because you told me to do it. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Y'all. I'm trying to hold it together, but I can't hold it together around Chelsea. The noises and things she does.
I'm just being myself.
I know. I can't. No, I'm just saying, for me, I think, you know, I've had a lot of introspection on this. And for me, it was when I was a kid, my brother and I were the only Black kids in the entire elementary school. And there was one Black teacher and later a Black principal, which was like made the news. It was so big. And but before the teacher and the principal were there, it was me and my brother. And you know, back then kindergarten or elementary school went K-6, so K-6, all these kids, me and my brother. And you know, like I said, that was the 70s, where, you know, Roots came out. We're right on the cusp of the civil rights movement, all this kind of stuff. And I went through a lot. That's when kids would hand out invitations to birthday parties in the classroom. And all these kids who I would kiki and ha-ha with, you know, throughout the day, they'd hand out invitations. I wasn't given one. I was sprayed with a fire hose walking to kindergarten with my brother. And these white guys told us to go back to Africa. And a lot of other stuff like that happened. So I had this, looking back on it now, this innate sense to try and please people, because my little brain, even though I talked about it with my parents, could not reconcile why I was not likable because of my skin color. And that is also how I became a writer, because my grandmother, I was so shaken after the whole fire hydrant, the fire thing, that my dad called my grandmother and she was like, you write about it. You write your feelings. And that's where me being a writer really came from, processing, because I had journals and I would try to process these feelings. You know, so I was always trying to please people because I wanted people to like me. I wanted people to see that I was likable. And so I became a people pleaser on top of being a parent pleaser. So my self-worth was always wrapped up in doing things that made other people like me, because I was suffering from the ill effects of white supremacy and people telling me constantly, whether it was overtly or, you know, micro or macroaggressions, that I was not good enough, that I was not likable. So,
I mean, that makes sense. And I think my reaction to it was the opposite of, no matter how smart I was, no matter how well-dressed I was, no matter how well-spoken I was, no matter how polite I was, it did not matter, because I was always, like you said, I was not invited to the mm-hmm. birthday parties. I was not invited, you know, no one really wanted to come to my birthday party. Mm-hmm. I was not, you know, I was always the last one picked for a group. I was always, yep. you know, the one who had to kind, who was always the other, no mm-hmm. matter what I did. And it got me to a point, instead of wanting to please people, I was just like, basically, pardon my French, because y'all know I try to keep this PG-13, but I was basically like, fuck y'all.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm not about pleasing any of you guys, because at the end of the day, I know that I'm smart. I know that I am intelligent. And I was very fortunate to have parents who worked really hard to instill that in me mm-hmm. so that I knew that it's not me, it's them. And that just kind of came with, okay, well, I'm not going to try to please you. And that turned into me trying to please them, because they did see the value in who I was. Mm-hmm. And that kind of shifted into all other things. And y'all did not come to this podcast for us to have therapy with each other. I'm so sorry.
That's part of who, what makes us writers, though. It's part of the whole process, you know, because my writing, as much as I try to fight it, because we always talk about, we just want to write stories, but I have been so deeply affected by all of these things that all of my writing, it has that undertone of race and everything. Struggle and all, no matter what story I try to write, even Bloodland. You know, I was just going to try and write this. First, it was supposed to be like a spooky story. And nope, it just turned into this is a plantation. And, you know, it's part of who I am. And I know a lot of people don't like to read that. They're like, I don't want to read about that. But that's, I think that's another reason why I'm scared to write, because I do have a whole list of books that I want to write, but they all deal with somehow with this topic of us and being Black in America. So
I think you should embrace this. And this is like, honestly, like I'm glad they're recording this. So if you're listening to this on the podcast, I hope that you guys are for sure getting something out of this. But honestly, Audra, like I think you should write that. I think that you have to live in your truth and who you are, because the thing about writing is, even from the very beginning, like you said, you're going to write, to journal, to process. And even when we are creating fictional stories, we cannot deny who we are. We cannot deny our Blackness. That's why our stories are what they are. That's why we live the way that we do. That's why we talk to the people that we talk to and promote the books that we promote. You cannot separate yourself from who you are and your lived experience just because you are writing fiction. And I think it's a good thing. I think we need more books with people confronting their Blackness and their race in a way that is healthy, in a way that is real, in a way that is actually grounded in the type of lives that we live, because so much of the stories that we are given are told from the narrative of somebody from the outside looking in, or from the aspect of let's take it to a 10, let's take it to the extreme, let's take this struggle to a level that in reality most people are not necessarily living through on a day-to-day basis, especially in this big old age of 2022. Yes, there are still macroaggressions. Yes, there are still microaggressions. Yes, there are still so many battles and fights and everything to be had. But on the day-to-day basis, your story of Black people wanting to buy a house and finding out the deeper connection to it, especially since it was on land that was ultimately stolen and that they are reclaiming for themselves, there is going to be a level of confrontation with that. And there has to be a level of Blackness clashing with whiteness, because being in America and being Black in America, you don't have the privilege of not recognizing race in every situation that you are in and putting it into perspective of, is this a safe space or is this not? Mm-hmm. How am I going to deal with this? Mm-hmm. Every space is like that. And trying to write a story where that's not in it, I don't think that's healthy. Personally, I don't think that's healthy. And the type of books that I personally want to read, the type of books that I want to support, are books that are authentic. And that's why I take so much issue with traditional publishing in general, especially with young adult, because I'm like, y'all are not out here writing books for Black girls who have very real experiences, and you're continuing to propagate this idea of being the only Black girl is the best route to take, because you're refusing to put her in situations where it's just like, you're not the only Black one and your Blackness is valid and it's not having to be explained or dismissed or minimized in order to make other people comfortable. And that's why with traditional publishing, I'm always like, they need to do better, because I'm not throwing shade at any of these authors, because I'm not taking away from their talent. I'm not taking away from their skill. I'm not taking away from their work ethic. I'm not taking away from any of that. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that from a much larger picture, much larger standpoint, this idea of pushing the idea that the only Black girl in the book has to somehow be magical in the sense she has to be strong and carry this entire story and make all the decisions for other people, and she has to be caring about other people's emotions, and she's not allowed to be unlikable. She's not allowed to have an attitude. She's not allowed to be angry. She's not allowed to be soft. She's not allowed to cry. She's not allowed to crumble under the pressure. I don't want any more stories pushing this idea that we are infallible human beings. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you know that you want to write stories that are fully fleshed and cannot divorce who you are in the life that you have lived from the characters that you're trying to write, that is a good thing. And I think more people need to embody that. That was a rant, but it is what it is.
And, you know, she trying to have me over here crying, y'all. I ain't gonna do it. I ain't gonna do it. I ain't gonna
I'm
do
not.
It.
I'm not. I feel like there's so many people who have so many stories that they want to write, but it's not what they have seen. And it takes a special kind of mentality to be like, I've never seen it, but I'm going to do it anyway. And it's hard. It's very difficult. But if you're listening to this podcast and you're looking for a sign, this is your sign. If you haven't seen it, do it anyway. Like Toni Morrison said, if there is a book that you want to read that has not been written yet, you must write it. You have to do the thing that has not been done yet. And some people will love it. Some people will hate it. But my thing is, if you're making people uncomfortable, that means that you're forcing them to confront something that they haven't confronted, that they absolutely need to confront. Because people are not uncomfortable because they're looking dead at something that needs to be changed. They're uncomfortable because they've been walking around this elephant in the room and you just threw bright red paint on it and said, look at it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's mm-hmm. when they become uncomfortable, and that's okay. You know, conversations and change do not come about because we're out here making people feel the same way that they have always felt.
Right. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
But we're going to move on because we are coming up on 50 minutes. I was not planning for this. I didn't even get to ask you like 8 of the questions that I had.
Well, damn
here,
it. Ask them quick. Ask them quick. I'll give quick answers. I want my question.
We don't have time for all these, but I'll ask you some of the ones that I definitely for sure want to ask you.
Okay.
One of the ones is like, if you could choose any lasting effect for your work, meaning your books or your podcast, mm-hmm. and you could have people feel what one specific thing, like you could choose, right? What would it be and why?
One thing that they could feel?
Yeah, mm-hmm. one lasting emotion that they would have from your work, books or podcast.
Pride in their blackness. Because it was, when I was growing up, there were not a lot of books that were written by black authors, and the books that were out there that had people that looked like me in them, they were struggle, they were dysfunction, they were trauma, you know. And that's, I think, why I struggle to want to write some of these stories that I want to write, because it deals with some of those aspects, but not in a gloomy way. I take the power back and write the endings that I wished were there. And so I couldn't look at books when I was in elementary school and be like, I can do that because she looks like me. So pride in being in absolutely unapologetically black and embracing all of who we are, the good, the bad, the indifferent, all of it, our idioms, our slang, our everything, just being proud of that in a world that says that we shouldn't be.
I love that. And last question, the question I ask everyone who comes on the podcast is, what writing advice would you give to any new authors starting out on their writing journey?
If you want to write, call yourself a writer and write whatever it is that you want to write, and figure out when you want to write. Do you want to write every day? Do you want to write when the mood hits you? But embrace your writing and call yourself a writer, because you don't have to just be a writer. You can be a writer and. So if writing is something you want to do, do it. Do it when the mood hits you. Do it when you've got that time alone. Whenever that feeling hits you, write and embrace it. And if it's what you want to go after it. And I don't want to say don't tell people you're a writer, because yeah, be proud of it, but be careful who you share it with, because there will be people who would tell you that you shouldn't do it because writers can't this, writers can't that.
Absolutely.
If you want to do it and guard it and protect it fiercely, because if you don't do it, you'll wake up one day and be in your 40s, your 50s, your 60s and realize, I never did it.
Yeah. So I'm going to add to that A, I 100% agree, and B, protect your dreams. Something that I can tell you, like, I'm not as, you know, the most seasoned life warrior out there, but I can definitely tell you that everyone who smiles in your face is not your friend, and everyone who is giving the side eye is not your enemy. So you're going to have to be very discerning about who you trust with your dreams and aspirations, because some people will absolutely try to tear you down so that they seem higher.
Mm-hmm. So, and everybody that's in your corner is not for you. Some people are just in that corner because they want to watch what you're doing and wait for you to fall.
Yeah. So that being said, Audra, we're coming up on the end of the podcast. So would you like to let them know the people where they can find you?
I want to keep talking. I want to keep going. Okay,
look, I have to edit this audio, and it's like an hour long already.
Okay. So. Where can they find me? Of course, betweentheReads.com. That is where you can find my podcast, my blog. You can snag merchandise. You can support me on Ko-Fi, Patreon. You can see all the episodes that I've ever done there. My writing website is Audra Russell Writes, and that's R-U-S-S-E-L-L. Writes, WRITES.com. I have not written in my blog there in over a year. It's shameful, but it's still there. There's lots of short stories and things there. So you can read about my writing journey there. Also, read at blacktome.com. That's an extension of Between the Reads, where you can go and read interviews that I have done with Black Indian traditionally published authors about their books and about their writing journeys. And on Instagram, Between the Reads podcast, Read It Black to Me, and Audra Russell Writes. And on Twitter, I am Read It Black to Me. I really only post on Twitter when I have my episodes drop on Tuesdays. I'm trying to be more active there, but Twitter confuseth me, so.
Follow her on Instagram, y'all, if y'all want her to respond. Yeah. I'm just gonna be real with you. Yeah. She's not on Twitter. Yeah. I know, because I'm on Twitter and she ain't there. Mm-mm. So, yeah. Mm-mm.
I try, but... Between the Reads podcast. Okay. I have four Instagram pages. I've told you three, but if you really, I stay on my Between the Reads podcast, and then second would be Read It Black to Me, but Between the Reads podcast on IG, y'all.
So yeah, that being said, you guys, that is it for this episode of the Written in Melanin podcast. Thank you so much for listening to Audra and I as we share what we've learned on our journeys as Black and Indie authors. If you'd like to support this podcast, then please share it with someone you think may enjoy it. Join my Patreon at patreon.com/CM Lockhart or grab a copy of my book, We Are the Origin, from my website, cmlockhart.com. If you'd like to support Audra, then please check out her podcast and her YouTube channel, follow her on social media, and keep an eye out for the re-release of her book, Bloodland. There are links in the show notes for absolutely everything, and thank you guys again so much for listening. So, until next time, I hope all your books are full of melanin.